Abe says hello.
And then the other one says hello.
And then you say, follow me.
And then the other one says, okay. I love it. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
And I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 214, our first episode of the year 2020.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
That's something to be excited about.
Sure it is, yeah.
The only problem is there's just two of us.
Yeah, we decided Kenny's not really a great fit, so we kicked him off the podcast.
Our goal for 2020 was to go down to a two-person podcast.
It only took us 5 days. We're doing great on our resolutions.
We have started strong here. For those of you that are super worried and have already turned off this podcast, wait, keep listening. And find out that we are joshing you. Kenny is sick to start off 2020 strong.
Like super sick.
Super sick. He said he's the sickest he's been in a long time.
Yeah, we're kind of worried about him, actually.
Kenny, this episode's for you.
Yeah.
The Final Fantasy VII Remake intro has leaked.
What? Leaked or dropped?
Leaked.
Oh, no.
Like the first... I don't know, 5-6 minutes of the game.
Oh.
The demo, at least.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched it.
Should you?
Right. I need your help and in convincing me if it's a good idea to watch it or if it's a bad idea to watch it and why.
It's a bad idea to watch it. I apply this to all media that I consume in my life. I've been doing this for years and it's paid off. I don't really watch trailers. Sometimes I make exceptions, but I stay away from everything I can, and it makes it way better. That's happening to me now. Like, I watched a movie last night that I knew I wanted to watch, but I didn't watch the trailer. It was amazing. I'm glad I didn't watch the trailer. I'm playing Dragon Quest XI right now. I knew nothing about it, and I'm getting all the surprises. So I don't think you should watch it.
I too like going in dark. You can understand why I have looked into a lot of the stuff that has come out for Final Fantasy VII Remake so far, because one, I had my doubts this was ever going to happen, and then it slowly happened.
You've also played the game.
Yeah, and I've played Final Fantasy VII, yeah. So like I'm not going to have things spoiled. But now that I know Final Fantasy VII is coming, there's a big part of me, Nolan, that just kind of wants to wait and experience it when it comes. And like, here's the thing. I'm going to like it. I don't care what they do at this point. I'm going to like it. And the music and the graphics and the characters, all of those things are going to get me very quickly. And if I see that opening cutscene in a YouTube video and a leak before I'm playing the game, it's like wrong context and wrong time.
You know? It's like, no, you should wait. I think you should absolutely wait, especially because it's a leak. If it was like an official release, which they wouldn't do,
then we could have the conversation.
Then maybe it would make a little more sense, but especially because it's a leak, that's just gross. Don't do that.
Yeah. I think that I'm there, but you and listener, you can understand my conundrum, like, because it's odd, you see, because I really want to see it, but at the right time and in the right context. So I think that I'm going to wait.
Okay.
As odd as that might be.
Okay.
Like in our retro game of the week, Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey.
Overview.
Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey is a PlayStation platformer. It was developed by Oddworld Inhabitants. So they named the game after themselves, and it was published by GT Interactive. It came out in 97, and it was also released on PC at the time and would later get a Game Boy port, of all things.
Game Boy?
Game Boy.
Weird.
Yeah, it was a different development team, I want to say, but it was a PlayStation title. I think a lot of people call the PlayStation home, or Oddworld fans at least. This game is a platformer, but
some would say a cinematic platformer, whatever that means.
Some, including us, because we just got through with the game. Well,
right, and I think that's the big conversation we need to have up front, because in reading about it, we had seen correlation, and even in our episode last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was at this point, when we played the game Flashback, there was some commentary from listeners talking about Oddworld, talking about this game actually, and saying, hey, play this one instead. But again, the correlation is there of Flashback and other cinematic platformers, and this game is where as well. I'd love to know your opinion, Nolan, on do you see the connection? Is there a relationship in your mind? And if so, what is it and to what degree?
Yes, but not in the cinematic platformer sense. And I'll tell you what it's similar to when we get to gameplay, but to me, the cinematic tag that they threw on Flashback is a representation of the time that it came out. Nowadays, it doesn't make sense to me, the whole cinematic thing. And this game has the cutscenes, and so I feel that, but let's just say if it's the same thing, it's way more modernized than Flashback was. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a platformer.
It's a platformer. This one is for sure a platformer. Yes, whereas Flashback was sketchy whether or not I was skeptical whether or not it was a platformer.
I'm glad we can agree on that at least.
This game is for sure a platformer. And so I don't think we have to throw cinematic or anything. It's just, it really is a platformer in its most base sense. Not only are you going left, right, up and down and traversing platforms, but you're having to solve the puzzles that typically come with platformers.
Right. And that's what you're spending most of your time doing in this game. But along with that, you get quite a bit of story. So like Flashback, this game has a lot of setup. It has a lot of setup, has a lot of story, and it's kind of constantly involving itself with the platforming aspect. So back up a little bit. This game was the first in what was supposed to be a 5-part Oddworld series, which was kind of, that's a lot to me. I think they made it 3 games in before it stopped, and there was a remake of this game later, but this started off Oddworld's journey, world series. The story is silly. So to me, this reminds me of the 90s and a lot of like N64 and PlayStation games, and I guess platformers really did this, where you had a silly character and then a silly plot. I'm thinking, we've played many of them, Banjo-Kazooie, but then also a little more adult with Conker's Bad Fur Day. So to me, the story here feels very 90s and it fits on the PlayStation. So you play as Abe, and Abe is an alien.
A Madokan,
which is some sort of alien, and his mouth is sewn shut, at least to a degree. He can still talk, but he works at Rupture Farms, which is a meat packing company on Oddworld. He's a janitor at this meat packing company, and one day he's cleaning, and he overhears the board, the executives. They are the Gugokans.
No idea. Alien species.
Other aliens that wear suits. And they're discussing how their products, which mostly have been animals that they've made extinct because they've killed them all, aren't performing well. So the next product that they have planned is something. And the secret ingredient? Madokans, Abe's race. And so it freaks Abe out. And then he says, and I got to get out of here. And so that you're spending the game trying to escape Rupture Farms, and rescue your Madokan brethren.
And that's a big component of it, rescuing your brethren, because you can't, like, that's... a big part of the game. You can't escape as Abe and do kind of really limited rescuing of your people, but you're going to get a relatively poor ending. I believe there's two endings. Yes. And if you rescue more than half of the Madokans on your way out, then you get a good ending. And if you rescue less than half, you get the poor ending. So you don't have to rescue all of them, which is nice.
Oh. You don't even get like a third perfect ending if you rescue all 99?
I don't think so. Although that would have been, that's worth it, or at least cool. It gives you some increased incentive. But if I understand correctly, there's only the two, the binary kind of options there.
Yeah.
Gameplay.
All right, here's something that's interesting. I did the first play of Flashback, and you did the first play of Abe's Odyssey.
It's like we knew Kenny would be sick.
And they are both, you know, these cinematic platformers. Mm-hmm. And so we both had the initial experience on video to where not only we, but our listeners could see us trying to figure it out. And both of them have a learning curve. And so I want you to kind of talk through some of your experience and this initial discovery of a really weird game with some really weird mechanics. I don't even think that you learned some of the main mechanics in the first play, if I understood that correctly.
I understood most of the controls of Abe, but
like movement
options. That's basically as far as I got. But there are other interactable things about the game that you uncover. One of those being the rescuing feature. There are some other pseudo weapons that you get, but that right there was the big difference for me from Flashback. And well, I guess the biggest difference is that this game is utterly ludicrous and silly versus Flashback, that is trying to be serious and tell a serious story.
And I would say, though, with it being silly, I don't know if, and maybe it does start a little bit more silly, but the underlying like story and tone is dark.
Dark humor.
Well, I mean, the whole they're going to eat his people and he's got to rescue. And as you go throughout the farm and make it like actually make it out of Rupture Farm into some of the advanced stories, I mean, this becomes a lot more like it's a lot more dark than what Flashback is, although it does it maybe in a dark humor tone.
I think the presentation is what makes it funny because the listeners aren't hearing Abe's voice like I am in my head right now.
Sure.
And so that kind of adds to it. But back to your original question, I think if we're talking gameplay, this one, well, Flashback kind of prepared me for Abe's Odyssey and a little bit of what to expect. So I think that they have their differences, but for the most part, it's very similar.
So I think what you're, maybe the similarities that you're seeing at least is in the control and the movement. The character that you've got in this game, similar but more advanced than Flashback, mm-hmm. similar to but more advanced than Flashback, is that your character is not, again, this small Mario-like sprite that's running around the screen. Instead, it's a two-armed, two-legged, tall creature that moves relatively slowly
and must obey the laws of physics to a degree.
Has to obey the laws of physics. Yes. If you fall too far, you're gonna splat. You can crawl down ledges, but you have to get to the ledge, turn around, and then press down. You can jump directly up, or you can do your angled jump like you can in Flashback as well. On him, I saw that you really liked one of the movements, but you can press down and then left or right, and the guy will crouch and then roll really fast to the left.
Really
or the
fast,
right.
Actually. Yeah, I thought that was pretty satisfying.
So, but you are, it's all working within the laws of physics, quote unquote, by the way. And so you're having to abide by that in this game. I thought that it was in some ways a typical 2D platformer. So you go screen to screen, you solve puzzles, you navigate obstacles, you avoid enemies. That's all what we're familiar with.
Yes.
But then pretty much everything after that is non-typical. We've talked about some of the handling, and again, we are prepared for that because of Flashback, but that is a a big hurdle to overcome to for someone to come into this game, especially today, and try to maneuver and control your character. But the biggest mechanic that I think is different than most platformers is what you have to use to save the other Madokans, and that is you've got a complete set of speech patterns to use that will interact with not only your friends, but the enemies and other things yes. within the stages. And I thought that was incredible. You didn't see it before you started, Nolan, but there is a menu option where you can actually, before you go into the game, you can see the different voice commands and actually play along with them. And so holding down L1 and then using your face buttons allow you to do three or four different commands, and then holding L2 and using the face buttons allows you to do a different set of commands as well.
Yeah. So what a typical interaction might be with one of these Madokans is you walk up to it and you say, hello. They're scrubbing dutifully, by the way. They're slaves and they're still cleaning.
Right, so say it again.
What?
So Abe says what?
Abe says hello.
And then the other one says hello.
And then you say, follow me.
And then the other one says, okay.
Okay.
That's your interaction. And it cracked me up every time it happened.
Every
it was
time.
Great.
Hello. Hello. It's so good because when you come up on your the other Madokans, they're scrubbing, they're working, they're tending mm-hmm. to the farm. And so you interrupt them. They look at you. They wave back.
It's questions asked.
Right. It's like, follow me. Okay.
All right.
You can also tell them to wait here.
Yeah.
So if you want them to wait here, and then you can make some foul noises.
You can fart.
Yes.
Said the F word.
And then there's a really amazing thing. I know you did it, Nolan, but you can also at times take control of an enemy that's on the screen. And if you do that, so they run around, they don't want you in their head, but eventually you overpower them and you get their power, or you get control of them. And then they're the only ones with actual weapons in this game. Some of them have guns. And so you can go and use the gun to take out other enemies, but they have voice commands too. Did you notice that?
The Elams?
Is that what they're called?
The writable things?
The little guys that are walking around with guns.
No, I didn't know those had voice commands.
Yeah, and so you can. So one of the things you can do is say, like, duck or get down. When you do that, the Madokans on the stage duck so that you can shoot through the other bad guys there.
Yeah, because, like, you're having to, there are obstacles all throughout this platform. And so with them following you, they don't get a free pass. You have to actually get through it safely. And you're having to interact a lot, actually way more than I was expecting. And on the surface, it looks like you're having to, well, these voice commands ended up being the main mechanic.
The main mechanic
of this game.
If you want to play the game like that. And one of the things, and I'll argue more about this later, but one of the things that I think they do well here is that if you don't want to rescue all the Madokans, this game instantly becomes easier.
Glad you said that.
Yeah.
Because it's a different game to me. Completely.
It is.
There are so many of them.
And it
ramps up in difficulty if you want to rescue them tenfold. Because not only do you just get them to stop cleaning, you have to escort them to these portals, these escape portals that I thought were checkpoints when I did the first play.
Sure.
But that's how they escape the world.
And even before you find them, some of them are just right on the stage, but most of them are in completely hidden areas that, honestly, if you don't have a guide, you're not going to find a lot of them in a casual playthrough.
Oh, yeah, like you randomly jump on some platform and you go up when you had no indication that there was an up screen or something.
Or completely hidden down areas.
Yeah.
Or you have to do a series of obstacles and unlock something. Like, it's very difficult to find them in the first place. And then to get them safely to a exit portal is near impossible without a guide. So, but not going after them, you can. I think you don't have to rescue or use a voice command until the third level or something like that if you don't want to. And so if you can make this game quite easier on yourself, and again, the nice thing is if you still want a good ending, you just got to save half of them. So it's just... It is hard, though. This game a massive, massive, massive puzzle.
Yeah, I think the difficulty, whether or not you decide to rescue the other Madokans or not, is going to be a challenge and a big learning curve. Because, and I stand by this, I think it's the clunky platforming. Like, again, this was the same complaint we had with Flashback, but it's slow. You are obeying the laws of physics to a degree, and you... It's foreign from what most people consider platformers these days. And so because of that, it slows everything down and it makes it 10 times harder because there are a lot of obstacles in this game. For example, one that you might come across and that they use frequently, a screen that has some gaps to jump just simply to the right, but in between the pits, there are like falling objects and they fall in a pattern, like three, then there's a pause, then two, then there's a pause or something. And you have to time your jumps and it's not forgiving. You're going to die so much.
Yeah. Nothing in this game is forgiving. It's a game that set out to be punishing and accomplished that. It is a very, very punishing game. And the thing that's kind of most frustrating, in my opinion, is not that it's a difficult game. You can have a difficult game and you can intentionally make a difficult game. But at least here in this game, and I'm saying that specifically because I think they do better in the remake of it, but there's not tons of checkpoints. You can't save it at any point, and so you're relying on the checkpoints that the game gives you, which means there might be times where you're replaying... This is Dark Souls, where you're replaying and replaying and replaying certain sections. But the problem is they don't do checkpoints too well. So sometimes those sections are like 10 to 15 minutes long of having to redo, which is just maddening. But being able to play it with save states, I think, alleviates some of that. And I was able to do that and really enjoy it. Like, in my opinion, playing with save states makes it a lot more bearable than having to rely on the game's save states.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, I don't know if that was a intentional decision. It must have been. That's what was shipped when it was released. But you said in the remake they added save areas?
I think there's at least – it's got a better save function or checkpoint options or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, but part of me kind of misses when games were a little harder. They're too easy these days.
Well, but it didn't make it easy. It's still, the game is incredibly hard. You just are able, it's a little bit more forgiving on how close or how much you have to suffer through to get back to the most difficult part. It is, this game is hard. You're dying all the time. It's one where you'll come to a screen with bombs and jumps on it, and you'll have to do it 5, 6, 7 times before you make it across or before you get lucky enough to do it. Yes. It's very tough.
Well, okay, so there's that view of it, but the other view, and the thing that I actually appreciated about this game, was that each screen had a most screens had a pretty clear goal. It wasn't like Flashback, where that game was a massive giant maze and I had no idea what I was doing at any point in the game. But in this one, I at least had an idea of what to do in each room. And there's not too much backtracking, especially if you're not rescuing Madokans. You're not going to have to backtrack too much. But I always saw, like, okay, this is going to be a jumping test room. I need to time my jumps. Or on this one, it's going to be a stealth room, which that's another mechanic I really liked, the tiptoeing thing. But I kind of like the simplicity they took in each room instead of making it a whole, like, Metroidvania-style backtrack mission or something.
And I think they have to, at least at first, because of how many mechanics you as a character have. We've been doing this podcast now for this episode for 20 something minutes, and we have yet to even talk about the sneak function, and you just threw that in. Like, that's a whole nother thing of holding your right trigger to be able to sneak past sleeping enemies. And so that's a whole nother thing with all of the talking and how your character operates at first. And then as you progress in the game, there's new things that are offered to you and taught to you even later. So you get some projectiles, not permanent, but you pick up rocks or different things that you can throw at a later time. You get a mount eventually.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Like there's so many different things that they layer into this game, and they do it slowly because they know that it is going to be a steep learning curve. And yeah, it really is. It's one that I, because of Flashback, I think that I was more prepared for. And so I was more, I was able to get this within our 7 days of playing, you know, our week long of playing. But if I hadn't done Flashback and came into this kind of just very raw, I think that it would have taken me more than just the week that we have to be able to start to feel familiar with this game.
Yeah, I feel you. The thing though, I think that helped me was that coming from Flashback was that in that game, they give you a weapon. And so in my brain, I'm like, all right, platformer, I need to shoot everything. Like this is a shoot, a running gun. I don't know. Mega Man trained me to think that way. But back to the stealth thing, this game is actually extremely about stealth.
Oh, this game's avoid. Yeah, avoid everything.
Avoid everything. I rarely fought anything until maybe a little later, but when you get some like access to some grenades, but even then, like that's still stealth to a degree. Like you are escaping. And so it added to the story. It helped me. Like Abe's a janitor. He doesn't have a gun. He's not going to shoot anything. And so as silly as the story is and as hard as it is for me to accept it and roll along with it, they stuck with it in the gameplay of making it stealthy instead of like combat heavy.
Yeah, for sure. Aged. We've talked about it already, and I'm sure that people are annoyed by now, especially those that didn't listen to Flashback or haven't played Flashback. We've made so many conversations centered around our
previous
game of the week.
This is Flashback Part 2.
It's not, though. I think it's very different. However, one of the things that aged with Flashback that ages with this one, simply because it's such a subgenre that is so specific, and if you're not used to that, then it's very different than most platformers. And so I think that's one of the things that ages is whatever this subgenre of platformer is, it is difficult in learning it because it is so foreign and so different. I think it's going, like I just mentioned earlier, it's going to take you multiple times. I read from many of our Discord listeners who had played this in their past or even this week and gave it a few hours of play, put it aside, didn't play it for a long time, and then come back to it, and then it starts to click after that.
Interesting.
And it might take that for you.
Yeah. And I understand that there is a pretty good guide that came with this game. You know, you remember those little things that used to come with games when
little
you spent
manual.
$60? Little manual. I miss those. And this one is really quality. I actually looked through one, not physically, but a scan of one. And it's got like in detail pictures and controls of like how to get past certain things and like how to start thinking about the game. Because I do think it requires that learning curve requires a certain way of thinking about this platformer in a non-traditional sense because it's not traditional. And so I'll tell you now, at the end of the week, I'm still not feeling comfortable. I have to be honest. Like, I get it. I made progress, but the age is showing, and it's like it feels gross. My hands are just like, why are we not holding right and jumping a lot?
Okay, so that is super interesting, because by the end of the week, I am getting a hang of it.
I don't know, man.
But I wouldn't be surprised if I played more than you this week, too. Not because you didn't give it your due diligence, but because because I was getting into it, and I was interested in finding the secrets, and I'm a completionist, so I was like, I've got to get all 99 or all 100 tokens. I mean, I was using a guide, of course. I'm Dustin still. But but in that, I was enjoying the grind and the pain of it. I will tell you this though, without my custom save states, my patience would have not been there. And
your key binding save states?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, without my F1, F3 quick save, quick loads over and over again, I would not have had the patience needed to, even with a guide, to be able to play this game this week. So
that's how I'm looking at it. Like if you had the console in front of you, you're looking at a very different experience, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
One thing for me that I think ages well here, they really did pull, so the cinematic aspect, they're not claiming this is a cinematic platformer, but I think that's because it's 97 now and they thought that would be silly because cutscenes are a thing and very much part of 3D games. But they really pulled off the whole like seamless cutscene to gameplay transition. There's not a ton of breaks once you're in the level of cutscenes. In fact, there's not any, but at the beginning of the game, I noticed this and I thought it was brilliant. They go from a straight up cutscene, like full on like cinematic feeling, and then do like a pan of the factory to get to where Abe is. And all of a sudden you're looking at the 2D, the side by the left to right gameplay screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's unique.
They do that later even with one of the stages that you're on. You go indoors and you come out in the distance out of another door. But camera kind of pans from the hut that you go in out to the other one. And I'll tell you, every single environment in this game, although they're similar in kind of their like dark aesthetic for the most part, they are all entirely unique. I think that they do really well with that. The first two stages, I believe, is where you're stuck in the farm. And so it is similar to one another. But then you go into kind of these more lush environments. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this nightscape. And then you've got some very different worlds. And they are all fully realized, fully beautiful. So much depth in the backgrounds. Yeah. Like not just your foreground and your background, but you've got layers of two or three pieces of the set that is in the background. It is all super attractive to look at. I agree with you. Their art direction is its best feature in this game.
Yeah, it was great. I actually wanted to point out that foreground background thing with the graphics. Like that, it caught me off guard. I went in a door and I was like, where'd I go? And I just stood there for a second before I saw it. but it was all seamless. Yeah. And not only that, just back to the detail thing, the humor here. So like I talked about it being silly and the plot is silly and yes, dark, but like it's goofy. And so they had that all throughout the stages. Like they have a casualty counter. It's like, what does it say? It's got something on it. And then it's got like a counter of casualties and that number changes. But they've got
It might be casualties. I think that's it says.
Yeah.
And so it's counting how many times you're dying, right?
Yeah. And just things like that. Like there was a lot of thought behind how you're going to feel when you're in each level. And so, yeah, I kind of felt ahead of its time in that sense. I don't know. I can't really name many platformers around that time that took the time to add that kind of depth to each stage. So hats off.
Definitely ahead of its time. And even with the story, it starts off kind of that silly, like, hey, y'all are going to eat me. I've got to save everybody. But if you get a little bit further, this story gets more real. I think they're doing some social commentary, honestly, and we won't get into all the details, but like it becomes a bigger thing where you're going to kind of, rescue creatures, and not just of your own, but creatures of the past, and set things right. So it becomes a much larger story, and I think they do that really well, and that carries over and ages well today.
Yeah.
Music wise, I think that it's good. It's not really like an orchestrated set of tracks. It's more, in my opinion, just ambiance, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was ambiance and super subtle, but it fit. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't looking for a catchy tune. In fact, that would have been weird.
You get a lot more sound effects than tracks, than music
and voice
tracks.
Acting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, which is so much fun. But then they do have some cutscenes throughout the game that are super fun and super intriguing and help build the story. And you hear Abe kind of narrating it, and it's a lot of fun listening to that. And I just think they did well artistically, whether it's graphic or audio. That was really where they did this well, and I think it carries over well today. Because you've got to remember that even this is 97. That's the same time Final Fantasy VII. This is PlayStation kind
OT.
Yeah, golden era. And so we're still limited on a lot, but they did a lot in a relatively early age, and that's impressive. Yeah.
I think they spent $4 million making the game, and then GT Interactive committed $10 million to marketing and publishing. Wow. So, like, it did have a big budget, but, I mean, it paid off. You can definitely see the love behind the team, or the love that the team had for the game and the direction for it. It shines through.
It must have done well because it did spawn some additional games. I know, Nolan, you said early on in the overview that it might have, they were planning to do five, didn't quite get there. But somewhat recently, 2014, for the PS4, they remade this game from the ground up. It's called Oddworld New and Tasty. It's a remake of this game. You've got 2.5D graphics. They've kind of
that's cool though.
More Madokans to rescue instead of just 99. Nolan, they went to I think like 200 something.
Oh no! Okay, no, I'm not getting that ending. Y'all can do that.
Well, but then they also for the first time offer difficulty settings, which is
nice.
So that if you don't want to, if you want the challenge, you can just ramp that thing up, or if you want an easier experience, and you can bring that thing down just a little bit. So that's nice too.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every episode, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. And I'll begin, and I will say that this is one episode where I really wish Kenny was here.
Me too.
And I'll say for many reasons, but one in particular is that when it's just two people, it's got to be unanimous for this to receive New Game Plus status, for the game to receive New Game Plus status. And I have a pretty good thought of what Nolan's opinion of this game was going to be. And I'll still see. I might be wrong, but I think that we are in totally different places. So it would have been super interesting to see where Kenny landed with this.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that this game is as rewarding as it is infuriating to play. Meaning that it is maddening, that it is rough, that it is painful, but with our modern abilities today, especially with emulation and save states, or even with playing the remake, we've got some more things on our side when it comes to playing and enjoying this game. I think they were shooting for the moon. The moon with Abe's hand on it, if you play
Oddworld
this game.
Moon. Yep.
I think they hit it and beyond. I think it is incredibly difficult. It is an incredibly high learning curve, but the art and the characterization and the story that they're telling and just all of that, I thought was absolutely incredible. I had so much fun playing it this week, and I think there's so much game there. I do think that age is where you get more of the frustrations and difficulties for sure, but I think there's enough good things to overcome the bad things, and I definitely give Abe's Odyssey my vote, and it will be one that I'm super sad when it doesn't get our vote for New Game Plus status.
Wow. You think you know me, and I'm about to change my mind just to prove you wrong.
I do think I know you.
But you, I don't like this game. So I don't know why this didn't connect for me, because I know in the back of my mind, I know that you're right. And I know that this game should be really, really great. And clearly there's passion behind it, and clearly a lot of that shines through. I was very impressed with a lot of stuff this week in the presentation of the game. Let's call it that. But for me, when it comes to actually diving into this game and playing it as a game, like you're supposed to, it's I don't get the rewarding factor that you got. I just got the frustrating part. It is difficult, but that's not necessarily why I'm not giving it New Game Plus.
It's beautiful.
Hold on. It's not the difficulty alone. It's something that doesn't connect with me about this take on platforming. Same for Flashback, same for any other game that you want to recommend in this genre. Because again, this was recommended to us when we trashed Flashback last week. They said, we'll play Oddworld. It's great. It's newer. It's a little better, but I don't vibe with it. And I'm sorry. I really am sorry about this. This isn't like, oh, this game sucks. I know it doesn't suck, but I can't, I don't give a new game plus. I can't.
This one really hurts me. I really wish
Kenny would have been here.
So creative. And I, here's the thing. I don't know where Kenny would land on it. I could see him going either way.
Well, he always lands in the middle. Right. So
I knew I had a better shot at it if he was here. Man, well.
Sorry.
That one really does stink. All right. So Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, is not New Game Plus certified. But what did you think?
He's so upset.
I really am for some reason.
He's so mad.
I love that little alien. It's so good.
Oh.
Astral Soul wrote in and said, do you find Dark Souls not frustrating enough? Is Battletoads too easy for you? Well then, boy, do I have the game for you.
No.
I have not hated a game as much as I hate this one in quite a long time. Despite my opening statement, I don't think this game is impossible, but trying to rescue all the Madokans as I tried to do results in some rage-inducing moments. Once I gave up trying to rescue everyone, I found the game to be slightly less frustrating, but doing that, I feel like I'm missing out on half of the game. I won't call this game as bad a bad one, as I can certainly see some enjoying it, and I appreciate the underlying concept, but I think the gameplay is an acquired taste, one that I will probably always hate.
I totally agree with the last statement. It's just not for me, but it's not harder than Dark Souls, and it's not harder than Battletoads.
Well, see, I get the acquired taste. I get the genre being a difficult thing and not for everyone. But in that genre that it is, and we can't change that, I think it is going to be the best of the best in whatever that subgenre is. But
well, maybe that subgenre is just bad to me.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not super popular because they don't make a lot of them, do they?
No, it's true. No, they stopped it.
Garlisle wrote in, as always, starting 2020 strong. He said, when I first encountered Abe's Odyssey as a kid, I found it unappealing and endlessly frustrating. Now that I'm older, I've got a much greater appreciation for this game. There are two things I'd like to shout out. First, the difficulty curve. Rescuing your allies is counterintuitively optional. The hardest stunts in the game are tied to that. This leaves the actual difficulty curve of the main game to be surprisingly smooth, while replays aiming for a full completion are challenged throughout. The second thing is that I've come to love the world and design. Oddworld really does have a unique character that stems from the clash of the goofy, comical Abe against the often brutal world around him. The hand-drawn areas are also help ensure the game has aged wonderfully. It is not the most player-friendly game, for sure, and I won't hold it against anyone too frustrated to enjoy, but I feel the good parts of Oddworld are good enough to earn respect even if it's not the game for you. And that, my friend, is around where I land. We've got Astral Soul and Nolan on one side, Garlisle and Dustin on the other, and Kenny somewhere in the middle.
He's the ref. This is a 50-50 split. Wow. It's like both of us can understand it. Well, you can't. You're mad. But
I can understand it. I just definitely don't end up in the same place.
Yeah. Well, Didn't get it.
Thank you guys for writing in. You can always send in your thoughts and commentary on the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or come into our Discord. Give us your commentary there in the commentary channel. We'd love to include your commentary as a part of next week's show. But for now, we're going to set aside Abe's Odyssey, and we're going to randomly select the game that we are going to be playing for the next 7 days from our Retro Master list. And that game is a game I've never heard of before. It came out in 1997 also.
I think you're being sarcastic, but okay.
But for a different console.
Mm-hmm.
It was published by Nintendo. Developed by Rare. And based off of the 1995 movie of a similar title. This game is a first-person shooter for the Nintendo 64.
Yes.
We are here at the beginning of 2020, and we are going to be playing, finally, GoldenEye 007.
Dude, it's one of the biggest.
It has arrived. Here's the thing. I'm super excited. Love this game. We've got a multiplayer, this thing. So yeah. Antonin or someone, find out how we're all playing this game this week.
Because we have to.
We can't set up a massive TV and all of us meet in one place and play a split screen.
I mean, we can. We can meet at my dad's house. He loves this game.
Okay.
I'll get on Mark. Wow.
This is one that many of us are familiar with. I've been waiting on it since the dawn of New Game Plus back in 2015. But is that right? 2015? Yeah, September 2015.
Yep.
And it is a game that I play quite regularly when I go over to a friend's house, so I already know my opinions on this game. I will say, though, that if you haven't come back to it, when's the last time you played it, Nolan?
Ooh, it's been a minute.
Okay,
actually.
Okay. Then it is going to be unfamiliar a little bit coming back to it, because it's Nintendo 64, right? But you know what? We got N64 controllers.
Ooh, we do. Thank you, Ben Wilson.
Ben Wilson. All right, so find a copy of GoldenEye 007 for the Nintendo 64 and play along with us this week. Here's the thing, though. Kenny doesn't listen to our podcast, and so no one tell him what game we're playing. Maybe he'll never know.
Oh, yeah, and it's not like him to ask us, right. Hey, what's the new game? I swear he could make it like till Friday and be like, wait a minute, what am I supposed to be playing?
Or he shows up ready to talk about Abe's Odyssey.
Yeah, all right. Please join us in our Discord server. You can go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord. There's a really great community in there. We love the community that we've built and that it's thriving, and we want you to be a part of it. So do that and meet us there. We also want to take a minute to give a special thanks to our Patreon supporters. Some of you listen to us and you support us on Patreon, and we really appreciate that. Thank you so much to everyone who supports. We also want to give a special thanks to Antonin, Ben, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Kevin, Corey, Maxima, Zach, and Zion. They are our producers, and we have a new producer named Kevin. So welcome aboard, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the family. Thank you for supporting us at such a big level.
Yes. And then one final thank you to Glenn, who is a new patron. Welcome aboard. And Shauna and Philip upped their pledge on Patreon. So thank you so much for the support. Once again, we love all of you.
Nolan, some of these did it before 2020 in the final days of 2019, which you know, and we've been celebrating around our Discord and Twitter, and us three have been celebrating ever since. But we eclipsed for the very first time in NGP history our goal of our Patreon goal of $500. And in doing so, we are committed to playing and recording a one-shot Dungeons & Dragons session with you, me, and Kenny.
Oh, man. It's kind of hard to believe that we're actually going to do that. We threw that out as a goal, as a joke, a long time ago, and here we are. And I got out my player's handbook, and I'm making my character. It's crazy.
This is a goal that we put on when we started Patreon years ago, thinking, that it was unreachable, unattainable, sometime in the distant, distant future, if anything. And the day has arrived. And so we're all three excited. Kenny started his character as well. I've started creating the world and the story for our one shot. It's going to be so much fun. We do have a little taste of what it might be like. We're not necessarily continuing that storyline, but we did it at the beginning of one of our recent episodes. Do you remember what episode that was, or what game we were playing?
It was pretty recent. I don't know.
It was episode 209, Xenogears. So you can go back and listen at the beginning of that episode, hear a little bit of that silly, ridiculous story. But we're going to be doing something entirely different for this upcoming special gift as we celebrate reaching that milestone. So thank you all of you for doing that, especially Garlisle, who's our director level. I mean, that's, you're carrying a brunt of that. So thank you guys for your support. As always, you can find us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch, as well as YouTube. All of those links are in our show notes. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice, and make sure you are subscribed so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play GoldenEye 007 all together, split screen. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
And I'm Oddjob.
And I'm Kenny.
That was a good Kenny impression.
Thank you, dude. I've been working on it. Yeah. And this has been New Game Plus.